Hi, this is Christopher O'Reilly, host of From the Top. Thank you for tuning in to this week's podcast. If you like what you've heard, please visit our website at fromthetop.org to watch exclusive video, listen to our complete radio archive, and learn more about becoming a member of From the Top. That's fromthetop.org.
Celebrating 10 years on the air, it's NPR's From the Top. Today, a return visit from a young musician who was on some of our earliest shows and is now making her way in the real world.
I should have been a lawyer, but law school's expensive, so instead I write songs.
But I think, you know, there's an element of what I'm doing and the way that I'm doing it is hard as much as it is fun, but it should be hard. I'm making a living playing my own music, and that should be incredibly challenging.
It's the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. And today, from the Heifetz International Music Institute in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, our lineup of outstanding performers also includes a teenage cellist from Highland Park, Illinois, playing the Paganini Variations by Piatigorsky, and a 15-year-old violinist from Palo Alto, California, playing the music of Astor Piazzolla. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Here's our host, one of America's great concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you, and welcome. We're coming to you today from the beautiful lakeside campus of Brewster Academy, where one of the Northeast's great summertime training programs for classical music takes place, the Heifetz International Music Institute. Teachers from major conservatories come here to escape the cities, put on Speedos and string bikinis, and water ski on Lake Winnipesaukee. Imagine violins held by toned biceps, and you'll get the idea. Of course, these great ripped teachers attract great kids. And not to be too self-congratulatory, one way you can tell is that this place is populated by a ton of From the Top alumni. So on today's show, in addition to meeting three performers who are studying here at Heifetz and are new to our show, you'll hear a couple of ensembles loaded up with some fantastic kids we want to feature again, including, as Joanne mentioned, a performer who was on a couple of our earliest broadcasts. She was 16 then and playing some dynamite classical piano. Now she's an ancient 25 and exploring some exciting new musical terrain of her own. But before we bring out these old-timers, let's meet a very talented 17-year-old cellist who's making his first appearance on this show. From Highland Park, Illinois, please welcome cellist Ben Freed. Sounds like you made some friends at summer camp already, Ben. That's good. Tell everybody what you and I are going to play and let them in on this piece's playful side.
We're going to be playing the Piatigorsky Variations on a Paganini theme. Now, this piece is variations on the 24th Caprice of Paganini, which hundreds, thousands, billions, trillions of composers have written variations on. However, what separates these variations is each one is a little mini caricature of a different violinist, violist, cellist, or composer of the 20th century. Some of the variations are really nice and admirable, and some of them are a little bit mean.
It's a really fun piece. Great way to start the show. Let's take it from the top.
Thank you.
Ben Fried, 17-year-old cellist from Highland Park, Illinois, playing Piatigorsky's Variations on a Paganini Theme. Ben, that was incredible. Playing variations, I mean, each one has a different technical trick that you have to pull out of the bag of tricks, but also just being able to stop on a dime and give each variation. I mean, it also helps that, as you say, they're sort of caricatures, but really being able to completely switch masks for each variation is just a fantastic trick and beautifully done. Really enjoyed that. I guess, Ben, you always knew that the cello was for you, and as a little kid, you accepted no substitutes. I mean, what do I mean by substitutes? What were your parents trying to get you to do?
Well, I mean, when I was little, my parents took me to the Suzuki school, and they were like, all right, like, Suzuki violin lessons, here we go. So I get into the room, and they hand me a stick with a box. And I'm kind of like, do you mistake me for a fool? Like, like, really? So I went home, and I tore open the box, and there was candy inside. So, I mean, I guess that was supposed to be my reward, but, like, you know, take shortcuts all the time. It'll always get you.
Well, incentive, I think, Ben, was the idea to get you started and get you interested so that you could work your way towards open. But you just tore it open.
I mean, they probably should have told me about the candy before they gave me the box.
Yeah, probably. Good idea. So how did you end up on cello, then?
I figured there wasn't a box big enough for the cello.
So you ate your way to the real instrument of your heart, but it's not like practicing cello is easy for you.
No, I mean, I get distracted really easily, so I need, like, little gimmicks to make myself concentrate for long periods of time. I've kind of got to trick myself into thinking that I'm doing something fun and enjoyable while I'm practicing.
I hear that. Strategies teenagers use to keep themselves focused while practicing. Sounds like a top 10 list to me. Actually, it's a top 5 list because we don't want to torture our listeners unnecessarily. But you actually use one of these unlikely strategies, right, Ben?
Indeed I do, Chris.
All right, so we'll listen up for that. See if you can tell which is the real one. These are the top 5 ways teenagers get themselves to pay enough attention to practice. Number 5.
Okay, so you ask your dad to place a chair outside your door, against your door, so you can't leave, even if you scream.
Okay. Number 4.
You can go to a really boring music camp where nobody does anything but practice all day, every day. Even though there's a beautiful lake outside, everybody's always practicing.
But you're not talking about high fives, are you?
Of course not.
Oh, okay. All right. Number 3.
You can give your cell phone, your Xbox, your iPod, your computer, and any other electronic device that could give you some freedom to your little sister. Not give it back, not let her give it back, and then you'll have to practice.
Okay, good one. And number 2.
Oh, you could place a football helmet on your head, get in a 3-point stance, and chant, ooh, chaka-laka-laka, ooh, chaka-laka-laka, ooh.
I'm going to try that one. I like that one, actually.
I recommend it.
And the number 1 way teenagers get themselves to pay attention,
practice facing a blank wall.
So, Ben, those are all, like, hella weird. What's the actual Ben Fried strategy of choice?
So, this originated when I was at camp a couple years ago because my room is always, those of you that have been in my room at Heifetz know that, well, my half of the room, so... that my room is always the messiest, so it smelled bad and it looked really gross. So, like, how can you practice in a room when you don't know which sense is being insulted first? So, basically, I decided that I would just clear a little bit of space in the right corner of my room and just practice facing the blank wall.
So that's the real one. You face a blank wall and that helps you practice?
Yeah, it's terrific.
You can tell people... You can tell people it's that Seiji Ozawa thing. He has a photographic memory, and so he actually, the back wall of the stage has to be blank so that he can project from his mind the score, you know. So genius Ben Fried here. Okay, when you're not playing for blank walls, Ben, I know you give some unusual concerts. Like, you actually like playing at nursing homes, I hear.
Yeah, no, playing concerts at nursing homes is actually really underrated. Because, like, okay, not only do you have a really receptive audience who like really wants you to do well and wants you to succeed, they also are like really, really sophisticated. Like after a concert, like you'll just be standing there. One of them will walk up and be like, oh, my brother was in the CSO. And you'll be like, whoa.
Yeah, right. You have a great way of connecting with the audience, and it's utterly sincere and utterly confident and really quite virtuosic. And it was a real pleasure playing with you and having you on the show.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you. Thanks, Ben. Ben Free, 17 years old from Highland Park, Illinois.
Go to our website to listen on demand, watch exclusive videos, and keep up to date with us on our blog. That's fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our second performer has just joined me on stage. He's an excellent 15-year-old violinist from Palo Alto, California, named Alexi Kenny, and he's brought us a great piece by a favorite of mine, Astor Piazzolla. Alexi, tell everyone what it's going to be.
We're going to play Astor Piazzolla's Grand Tango, arranged for violin and piano by Sofia Gubadulina.
Now, Sofia Gubadulina, that's easy for you to say, really famous and pretty avant-garde contemporary composer. So she did this piece?
And yeah, she's actually one of my favorite living composers, and I'm a big fan of contemporary music, so I actually got to meet her the other month when she came to San Francisco, and on Sophie Mutter premiered her violin concerto, and that was pretty amazing. She doesn't speak a word of English, I found out, but I was dressed in like a t-shirt and flip-flops, and it was pretty awkward, but really interesting anyway.
Well, I'm sure Miss Gubadulina really appreciates having a star, or fan. I'm looking forward to playing this piece. Let's do it. Alexi Kenny, 15-year-old violinist from Palo Alto, California, playing Piazzolla, Le Grand Tango. Wow, what a great piece. Great performance, too.
Thank you.
What strikes you about Piazzolla's music that is so exciting?
It's just so amazing, especially this piece, how it just fits together. You know, you can't really give it away all at the beginning. It's kind of unfolds, like, I don't know. It's obviously a dance, but it always reminds me of this seductive, like, woman just coming on stage and joined by a man later, and they just begin to dance. So yeah. It's a lot of fun to play.
It's a great, great musical form, great dance form, and a wonderful performance.
Thank
you.
You
really have the flavor of it. Buenos Aires after midnight. That's what I was hearing. That's great. Alexi, we talked a little bit earlier about a great idol of yours, Sofia Ubadulina, who actually arranged this piece. But there's another great female musical role model in your life, Jenny Rudin. Tell us about her.
She's my violin teacher, and she's a really incredible woman. She's 82 years old, but she insists that she never learned anything from any of her teachers, ever. Which I find a little bit strange and slightly perturbing, but...
Because it looks and sounds like you come from a traditional, very solid violin training, so how does that work?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess she was she had a really hard life. She was living in Siberia for a while. She was exiled there, and... just a really incredible story, and I guess she made it through without learning anything from any of her teachers.
Gosh. Well, at the very least, we should pass that along to Ben Fried. Maybe that's another way of concentrating when you're practicing, being exiled to Siberia. I think that might be another way to do it. And your dad is another great role model for you as well, but not necessarily in the area of music. What do you two get up to on your free time?
Well, my dad and I are really big foodies, so... we always have to take a trip up to Napa every year, which is pretty close from my house.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah. and we always eat at one really expensive restaurant, but we never can tell my mom about it because she doesn't like to see it on the bill. So we try to find out ways to, like, get around her seeing it, like paying with cash and stuff.
That's good, ganging up with dad to have subterfuge against mom. That's... real healthy habit
nice.
There. So where did you go this last time? Any recommendations?
We went to this place in Yountville, which is like where all the yuppie restaurants are. And it's called Ad Hoc, and they make like the best fried chicken in the universe.
This is the same place owned by the guy who owns or runs the French Laundry, which is a place you can't get into without, 3 years in advance, reservations or something?
Something like that.
But fried chicken sounds like haute cuisine, you know, comfort food style.
Yeah, I think that's his idea. It's just kind of like comfort food with a gourmet twist.
Sounds good to me.
It's really good.
How about, what's the best thing to eat at the Haifa's cafeteria?
You know, I don't want to offend anyone, but I've got to say, the Rice Krispies, you have to try them.
Okay, well, on that note... really good being with you, seriously.
Thank you.
Playing the Piazzolla with you and getting to know you a little bit. And best of luck.
Thank you.
See you soon. Alexi Kenny, 15 years old, a violinist from Palo Alto.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this episode of From the Top to bring you the Deborah Lee Kaufman Show. Our next young performer, the delightful 17-year-old violist Deborah Lee Kaufman from Robbinsville, New Jersey, should have her own show. She's playing on every single piece of music from now on. Here's Deborah Lee.
I don't get it. You're playing on the remaining three pieces on the show. I don't even get to do that, and I'm the host. How did you get to do that?
I paid off the producers, yeah.
Okay, my gosh. In there schmoozing.
Not really.
So tell everyone what you and I are going to play to start off the Deborah Lee Kaufman show.
We're going to play the concert piece in G minor, Opus 46 by Hans Sitt.
And we've got a listener dedication for this piece from a proud father. Deborah Lee, will you do the honors?
This dedication is from Michael Campbell. He listens to From the Top on Iowa Public Radio in Cedar Rapids.
Hi, this is Michael Campbell. I'd like to dedicate this piece to my four wonderfully musical kids, Andy, Sean, Maggie, and Allison. Thank you all for your love of music. through school and church, at school band concerts, parades, coffee shops, even as a lasting tribute at your grandfather's funeral mass. Each of you has sought out and seized opportunities, taking risks, stepping out, sometimes getting bruised, but all the while growing as a consequence. Thank you for being such good influences on me and for all those around you. Love, Dad.
Thank you.
Deborah Lee Kaufman, 17 years old, our violist from Robbinsville, New Jersey. Now, Deborah Lee, great piece, by the way. I've never heard of him before, and it sounds...
No one has.
But he's written a fairly famous book of exercises.
I have etudes, yeah.
Etudes and things, but I mean, he sounds a little bit, you know, I guess he's sort of latter 19th century, but there's, mm-hmm. I think there's Mendelssohn, there's Schumann, but yeah. I think pretty heartfelt.
Yes.
What do you think? I mean, is it a piece you've always loved, or is it a piece you came to lately?
No, I actually hated it when I first started it. Uh-huh. I didn't use any phrasing. I went through it just like I would an etude, and I came to my teacher. I was like, oh, I can't stand this piece. Then we went through it, and we worked out the phrasing. I'm like, wow, he gives me such freedom to work out with musicality, with the piano part. It's just... Once you get into it, it's my favorite piece ever.
Well, I think that's an object lesson. I mean, I remember friends of ours were assigned a piece at a chamber music festival, and we mm-hmm. all hated it, all four of us. It was a piano quartet by Paul Hindemith, but we just didn't really feel a kinship with it. And then, but you know, the job was to get on the page, figure out what he did. I mean, obviously, he did something on purpose. And yes. and made a wonderful performance of it, and good for you for really getting this personal connection with this piece and really brought it off beautifully. We talked earlier today with our young cellist Ben about the difficulty of focusing in order to practice, but apparently that's not your problem.
No, I am compulsive in over practicing. I've actually had several teachers, over the years, tell me I need to practice less. So I guess that would be my issue. I just feel like anytime I'm not practicing, you know, the guilt sets in. So
my favorite overachiever story of yours has to do with driver's ed. How do you overachieve at driver's ed?
I manage it. I promise. Well, I guess I'm kind of known, like, I'm the girl who always asks for the maximum on a page limit, but in my defense, there was no maximum on this project. We were supposed to research a car, get, like, health codes, stuff like that. People turned in 3 pages. I am handed in a half-inch binder with over 60 pages.
A binder? And
yeah,
weren't you saying
this
was supposed to be, this was like a fantasy project, like, you know, pick a car that you might like and research it, you know, price it out, find out what it's going to cost.
I didn't like the car.
You didn't like the car.
I thought we were supposed to. He said, be thorough. I was thorough.
God. I mean, don't you think it was a little much with the actuarial tables and stuff? And handing the teacher a binder. Oh, my God.
My teachers are used to it. I hand in binders for projects routinely.
But your overachieving tendencies have been harnessed for the purposes of good. Tell everybody about your community service organization.
Well, I was in 8th grade. I think it was that summer. And my dad and my Grammy, we actually realized, obviously, there's an issue with fine arts and education in America. So what we did, we started up this project in Beverly. And then we have a second location starting now in Trenton. What it is basically we find local sponsors and donors. And we're able to buy violins with that. And then we use those violins. And I give lessons along with my dad and a couple other volunteers, and we teach kids who wouldn't otherwise have financial access to the fine arts. And just beyond giving them access, we also try to make it fun, like incorporating it into what they learn with school, or, you know, teaching them songs that they would know.
Mm-hmm. I applaud your efforts. Absolutely. Come on. Yeah. Well, Deborah Lee, we're going to hear more of your great playing in just a few minutes when you play some chamber music with your friends here at Heifetz. But it's been wonderful having you introduce yourself to us as a soloist. We look forward to hearing you again.
Thank you very
much.
Great
talking with you. Deborah Lee Kaufman, 17-year-old violist from Robbinsville, New Jersey.
Go to our website to see today's 10th anniversary alumni guest, Stephanie Nillis, wax poetic about everything from Shostakovich to Tom Waits. And while you're there, take a peek at our photo galleries and check out our blog. All that and more right now at fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations. From Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. From the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. From the Gruber Family Foundation to extend the breadth and depth of NPR's international coverage. And from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This is NPR.
Welcome back to the Radio Showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. From the top. This week we're at the Heifetz International Music Institute in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary this year with return visits from young musicians from each of our past seasons. Up next, one of our favorite young pianists from our earliest broadcasts. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Today's program is made possible with support from the Wolfboro Inn and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. Over the last 4 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need, and we still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Stephanie?
Hello.
You were one of our favorite pianists. Well, you still are one of our favorite pianists, but I mean, you were 16. You were on twice. You were 16 and then 17 the year after when you appeared on our show. How old are you now?
Old enough that I don't have to answer that question.
Good enough. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Stephanie Nillis. Stephanie? Stephanie, your musical career has taken an amazing turn, and we're going to learn about that in a few minutes. But first, we want to hear you play in a great piece of chamber music. And to do that, we've assembled four string players who are also From the Top alums and who are all studying this summer here at Heifetz. Standing next to you is our first violinist, Elena Merrimee, 16 years old, who was on our show last year. Elena, welcome. We played some
Thanks.
Beethoven last time I saw you.
Yes.
Stephanie, tell everybody what you guys are going to play together.
We'll be playing the Scherzo from the Shostakovich Piano Quintet in G minor.
And Elena, you've had to put this movement together rather quickly, yes?
Yeah, the four of us string players just started rehearsing it last week. And we just rehearsed it for the first time with Stephanie yesterday.
And I had the pleasure of helping you out a little, I like to think, when you all got together for a rehearsal yesterday. Check this out. Do a very nice sort of quick stroke, but you're using about half of the bow. Could we do a whole bow? I would like really shoot to the end of the bow. Slightly more off the string, but definitely full. Really awkward, really wooden, very very much like that. Right now it's like sort of nearly there, but it's nice. It's too nice. There ain't nothing nice about this. So you're laughing about this. Is this something that's come up before?
Yeah, we keep getting the comment that it's too polite.
Yeah. Okay. It's got to be, you know, you guys play through this movement, and you know what the ethos of the piece is, and so I think you need to go for it. So yeah, full bows, and don't think in three. Think one quarter per measure. Do it that way for a second. See what that sounds like. Now try this. More separation between them, because if we're all doing full bow, all four of you doing it at the same time ends up sounding just like waxy buildup. So get to the end of the bow, stop before the next bow is. It shouldn't be a sort of a brushy stroke. It should be a sort of really from the frog to the tip, from the tip to the frog, and nothing in between. We need a lot more bow speed and a little bit more space between the quarter notes. Excellent. That's beautiful. Well, it's not beautiful, but you know what I mean. It's like beautiful, but not really. It's really ugly. It's gorgeous. You know, that's what I mean.
So yeah, was that helpful or was it just cringeworthy?
Elena? No, it was helpful.
Yeah,
I like it.
You gonna go for it now?
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear this. Let me introduce the other members of this quintet. We have Clayton Penrose Whitmore, 16 years old, a violinist from Evanston, Illinois. Deborah Lee Kaufman, of course, since this is her show. Deborah Lee is by far our most recent alumni in this quintet. And on cello, Julian Langford, our 17-year-old friend from New York City. Again, this is the Scherzo from Shostakovich's Piano Quintet, Opus 57. Thank you. The Scherzo Movement from the Shostakovich Piano Quintet, played by Elena Merrimy and Clayton Penrose Whitmore, both 16-year-old violinists, Deborah Lee Kaufman, 17-year-old violist, and Julian Langford, 17-year-old cellist, and at the ripe old age of 25, it's in the script, sorry, our pianist, Stephanie Nillis. Stephanie, who was on a couple of our earliest shows, is with us today to help celebrate our 10th anniversary. Stephanie, you've still got great classical chops. Really great to play to see you play this piece and hear you working on it and stuff. But you're not playing much classical music anymore. I mentioned earlier that your career has gone in a whole new direction. You're writing your own folk jazz songs and singing and driving all over the country, performing them wherever you can. We decided to ride along.
So basically, I'd say I spend about 90% of my life in a car driving. I'm not so much a folk singer as I am a driver. I've got a keyboard in the back seat, and right now I'm driving to a gig in Mankato, Minnesota.
Hey, maybe you want to go down and see Stephanie live in person. She's going to be here in Mankato at the Coffee Hag down on Riverfront Drive tonight.
I've been on From the Top a couple of times. The first time I was 16 years old, I was a sophomore in high school. I was a part of a little piano trio called the Fine Arts Trio based out of Chicago. We had just won the Fish Off competition. We did a show in Memphis, and I remember we played Rebecca Clark's piano trio. That taping of From the Top that year was the first time anybody in my trio had been in Memphis, so we decided that unbeknownst to the staff at the radio program, we would sneak out at night and go into these little hole-in-the-wall bars and listen to whatever blues music was playing at the time. So I graduated from high school, and at the end of high school, I was pretty sure that I wanted to be a classical pianist, so I went to the Cleveland Institute of Music, where I ended up getting a degree in classical piano performance, and had it in my mind, you know, I was doing a number of international competitions and sort of was unofficially preparing for the Van Cliburn competition, which at that time was going to be 4 years down the road. So I was learning all sorts of music, practicing in a room by myself 7 hours a day, and one day it occurred to me that I was sort of unhappy, and I thought maybe it had something to do with the fact that though I loved music dearly, I did not necessarily love the process of sitting alone in a room 7-8 hours a day learning music that was written 250 years ago, beautiful as it might be. So I quit, and I moved to New York City so that I could do everything but music. Had all kinds of odd jobs. And then about a year into living there, I came across a couple of jazz musicians who sort of encouraged me to get into jazz improv and maybe fool around with writing or whatever I wanted to do that, you know, harnessed the creative side of my brain. And also about that time, I was hanging out in anti-folk clubs in the East Village and going to open mic nights. And I remember thinking, you know, I could do that. So really, I started writing out of spite. It's the story. So I started writing songs.
I should have been a lawyer, but law school's expensive, so instead I write songs about how my boyfriend broke up with me and he don't love me. Oh, how can I go on? 'Cause you can't write songs about tax abatement or filibusters, 'cause nothing rhymes with that shit except for filibusters and tax abatement. Besides which, you can't change anybody's mind by the time they finish their bottles and Chardonnays. Just tag the time you got and go on your way.
So here I am in the car, as I always am, driving from town to town, playing about 20, 25 gigs of my own songs a month. And I've decided to, in lieu of using the internet the way that many people my age do who are trying to make a living as a musician, I'm going to perform and gig and tour the way that people like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger did. So this is old school.
You can't change everybody's mind by the time they finish their bottles of Chimay's. Just take the time you got and go on your way.
My favorite gigs are usually surprises. You know, they come in all shapes and sizes, but most of them are little coffee bars or sometimes dive bars, but mostly coffee houses as a part of the folk circuit in tiny little towns all over the country, sort of like the one I'm playing tonight in Mankato. My whole life is just one big adventure at this point. There's a lot of high highs and low lows. I'm depending really heavily on the kindness of strangers that I meet at gigs to really take care of me, take me in, feed me. But then sometimes, you know, there's the experience of having to sleep in my car, sometimes by myself at a truck stop in the middle of the United States. And it's cold out, and I'm almost out of gas, and I don't have money to fill up my gas tank. But I think, you know, there's an element of what I'm doing and the way that I'm doing it is hard as much as it is fun, but it should be hard. I'm making a living playing my own music, and that should be incredibly challenging.
Stephanie, who knew you had such a great voice, too? I mean, yeah. And also that you haven't completely abandoned your European-influenced roots. I hear a little bit of Kurt Weill in there.
Right.
So what's the plan? Where do you want to go? Do you want to end up at the Staples Center? Do you want to play small houses and have the intimacy with the audience? What do you want to do?
I would like to make it medium. Mm-hmm. That's my plan. If I could have, like, health insurance and an apartment, that'd be cool.
That'd be good. Not have to sleep in your car.
Yeah, yeah.
I want our listeners to know that they can check out pictures and video of this rising star, both from when she was first on our show as a mere lass, and now by going to fromthetop.org. And now, Stephanie, we couldn't have you back on From the Top without hearing one of your own songs in its entirety. Tell everybody what you're going to perform.
This is a tune I wrote called Over Easy Eggs, which is a little homage to Tom Waits. Some of the kids didn't know him, but hopefully some of you do. So it's sort of a little tune. It's sort of makes fun of the avant-garde music scene in New York City.
Great. So a little story and a great amount of atmosphere. And you've made a nice string arrangement for this, since we have all these great string players here running around at the Heifetz Institute. Let's see. I see Chailey Smith over there. You all remember Chailey as one of our roving reporters. Chailey is 17, and she comes from Philadelphia. And what a surprise. It's Deborah Lee Kaufman, again on viola. And Ben Fried, lest we forget, who started today's show, is going to play cello.
And there's one more really critical part in the arrangement.
Stephanie, modesty forbids.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a truly virtuosic performance on the triangle with beer bottle, Chris O'Reilly.
Thank you, Stephanie. And may I say that I hope you like my playing so much that you'll take me along when you hit the big time, which I'm sure you're ready to do. This is a really fun way to end our show, and I want to thank all of our great young performers today, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Stephanie Nillis and Over Easy Eggs.
Sage green bottle of bottled up nostalgia, the cure for which is fry and over easy eggs. Then I tape the crackles on a four track and superimpose them over words, 'cause music just ain't music without that hiss. And I want to marry a record collection and be a homebody. Finger painting through the air like my voice is just a bee. And New York is just a Chinese dragon hurling downhill at the turn of the millennium. And in the alley is a funeral procession led by a tuba. We're all of us fables, eight part lies, one part truth, one fought hard to distinguish the lies from the truth. And the people who know aren't talking, and those who don't shut up. They flap their jaws until they're soft, till no one's listening. Is a place where no talent wastes of space. I'm made able to make do. And if you've got valid dreams, it's a nightmare that follow you. There's nothing like driving down to Texas with a 40 between your knees. Navigating giant Oklahoma potholes. Don't spill on your blue jeans, 'cause if the smell of stale beer escapes into the fall air, it will never cease, never cease, never cease, never cease, never cease, never cease. New York is just a failed experiment. I'm sure she'll miss you more than you'll miss it.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri with Caroline Cardias-Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette with Dan Hallis and John Surtees. The executive producers are Gerald Slavin and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. Thanks this week to the Wolfboro Inn. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partners, New England Conservatory in Boston.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.